Go ahead. Make my day.
Well, it would be my pleasure, Mr. Eastwood. Just stay tuned to History Worth Hearing, and your day will certainly be made. Hello, Vashon and Mari Islands, and all the ships at sea. This is History Worth Hearing, and I am your host, Chris Austin. We have a great show for you today. Elsa Kronquist and I will be reviewing a paper from 1916. We, of course, have island trivia for you, and we'll let you know about some upcoming museum events. One of those events, of course, is our monthly museum talk, and for July we have Lives Well Lived, Strawberry Festival Luminaries, Two Women Who Shaped Vashon. This will be July 8th at 7 p.m., and it's a Zoom call that you can register for free at VashonHeritageMuseum.org. The talk itself will feature two fascinating women, one Melinda Powers, who's former owner of the Hardware Store Restaurant, and Betty Edwards, former owner of the Little House. Both of these women have done so much to shape our community, and it's going to be a fascinating talk that will be moderated by Susan McCabe. What else we have going? On July 10th, from 8 to 10:30 p.m. in the backyard of the Vashon Heritage Museum, will be Whale People, Protectors of the Sea. From 8 to 9:30 will be the opening program with blessings, speakers, and songs, and from 9:30 to 10:30, the exhibit and the 13-minute IMAX film screen will be on loop, and I've told this is an incredible piece of work, this IMAX-type film. This special exhibition will run through August 28th and be available for viewing each Friday and Saturday evening, 6 to 10 p.m. Check it out. It's absolutely out of this world. Then on July 16th, from 6 to 10 p.m., we have Festival Friday. As you know, the festival is being held in the IGA parking lot. Well, right next to that is the backyard of the museum. So just mosey on over. You can see the Whale People exhibit. You can check out the In-N-Out Being LGBTQ on Vashon Island, which is an award-winning exhibit. You really owe it to yourself to see. So lots of good stuff. Now, for our one caveat, as we always have, all our interviews were conducted over Zoom, so I apologize in advance for any sound issues. And yeah, you guessed it. I have to go through corrections and retractions from our last show. Okay, top three. United Airlines is not making Vashon Airport its new hub. Washington State Ferries are not offering free rides if you water ski. An extraterrestrial being is not running for Vashon Mayor. I don't know. I personally think that might not be incorrect, but we'll let it go. Now, let's get on to our first interview. All right, listeners, we have a treat for you today. As you know, on our show, we like to highlight the upcoming speaker series. And in the month of July, we have the Vashon Heritage Museum, in partnership with the Vashon Community Care, presents Lives Well Lived, Strawberry Festival Luminaries, Two Women Who Shaped Vashon. And I have one of those two women with me today, Betty Edwards. And Betty, welcome, and thank you for giving up your time to do an interview with me. I really appreciate it.
Well, this will be fun. It's brought a lot of memories around. So yes, Chris, I'm glad to be here. Thank you for the honor.
Oh, okay. Calling it an honor. That's new.
Okay.
So please explain the title for us. It says Strawberry Luminary. So it's a lot of your... a lot of what you've done for the community around the Strawberry Festival?
Well, you know, I'm not sure how they picked the final name, because I just received, you know, the information and question to do this. So I don't know how they came up with the luminaries. It was women who have helped shape Vashon. And I think that we were both picked because of our involvement with community, et cetera, et cetera.
I see. Well, I read a little bit of your bio, and it seems like a lot of your... volunteer work has been with the Vashon Community Care Center, correct?
Well, a lot of it was, I think that's what some of it was based on. And I think a lot of it was based on because they asked us to do your former life and the things you've done for the community. And, you know, the Little House was very involved. I like to always say I potty trained a whole lot of children on gummy bears and stickers. And I taught a lot of kids how to tie great bows. You know, we were very involved with juniors and high school students. And, you know, my story was based on through the eyes of a child. And that's kind of where it's been. So we've done scholarship. We've created soapbox derby. We did the beer garden in the backyard. We had the Christmas tree in the backyard. So I think it was just public involvement is why they picked me. I'm not sure. Like I said, it was an honor and a good tickle to the heart.
Yeah, I bet. I bet. And well deserved. So
thank you.
Can we back up a little bit and just yes. Kind of how did you come to Vashon and, you know, set up shop here?
Well, quickly, because that's a long story. I'm just going to say I followed my heart. And the heart brought me to Vashon, and it continued to be there. And I've been here over 40-some years now. I had the store for 36. So once I got here, I had some questions about being here, but it all turned out to be the best thing that ever happened. So, you know, it's kind of like I said, I just followed my heart.
And you know, we have some, for listeners that may not know, maybe they're new to the island, could you explain how the Little House came about?
Funny, I was working at Nordstrom in the fashion office of all things, and now I wear my blue jeans. But gentleman here from the island, Cord Harmson-Streckel, who many people will know, was working on their catalogs. And we were at dinner one night, and Cord, I had decided to leave Nordstrom's. And Cord said, what are you going to do? And I said, I don't know. And he said, why don't you buy the Little House? And I said, quote, unquote, what's the Little House? And, you know, so I went, and the long and short of it is, I bought the Little House. Knew nothing about buying. I had been in sales and marketing at Northwest Natural Gas in Portland, but a different type of retail. So Gene Peck had established a store 6 years before. We negotiated. I bought it. And on January 1st of 1976, I owned the Little House.
I'm curious, what was the Little House? What was its purpose when you bought it? Was it retail or was it a business?
It was retail. It was retail. And through the era and time, of course, it has changed a great deal. It had a lot of clothing and baskets. That was what was in at that period of time. It was about the period of time, if you think about it, that the big signs were saying, you know, we're the last ones to leave Seattle to turn out the lights. So the island was very artsy and very involved, and the clothing was very India imported type of clothing. And so we switched. The only thing that I really kept in the store, we kept baskets. They had a Starbucks coffee at that period of time, way back then.
Really?
Yes, I have a porcelain double-sided sign that says Starbucks coffee with the old bare-chested mermaid on it. So that was kind of an intrigue, and coffee was very important to the island at that time. And the marketing director of Starbucks used to say, it's a very educated island because they drink so much dark roast, and it used to make me smile. So anyway, it was a gift shop, and we just changed some of the things around and added all the sweet treats and candies and things for the kids, and a couple of toy rooms and a soap room and a kitchen room, and added wine, and just kind of continued to change as times changed, Chris. That's all I can tell you.
Well,
if there was a challenge, we tried to meet it.
So as far as your volunteer activities on the island, did that start immediately, or was that a gradual process as you became more comfortable living here, or?
Like I said, if we saw a need, we tried to step up to it. We created Soapbox Derby and ran that for the kids for several years. We did do the first beer garden for a festival in the backyard of the Little House for several years. We were one of the first to do scholarship before the actual foundation was created. Wow, I don't know. I could just go on and on and on at the fun and silly things we did. If there seemed to be a need or something that would be a little spark, we stepped in. Yes, I was involved with the Chamber of Commerce. Yes, I held offices before when it was just Vashon Business Association. And my tie to the community came a lot through Vashon Community Care. I did run for mayor for them. I did not win.
Oh,
we raised $10,000 for them, and we had a great time. a great time.
Another stolen election. Oh my goodness.
Yeah. And then I was honorary mayor. So that was really fun. So, you know, we did the floats in every parade and, you know, you ask, we tried, you know, we stepped up.
So how did you identify needs in the community? Did you see them yourselves or would people come to you and say, Betty, Vashon needs this, and then you would tackle the problem?
Oh, nothing is done by one person. My store is a TEAM and always has been. And, you know, when we found out we could create a Christmas tree in the backyard of the little house and all the third graders would come sing, it was great. It was wonderful. And that was a community effort. You know, I was playing third grade room mom. I didn't have a kid in this class, but I had been a third grade room mother and they sang, had morning sing-alongs every morning and let's do a Christmas tree lighting. And that's what we did. Beer garden was just part of festival. Soapbox Derby was, oh my gosh, my mother was park director in Eugene, Oregon. And they ran Soapbox Derby down my hill in front of my house. And I said, hey, let's do it. We stepped up, Dan moved into the position and found out all about Soapbox Derby and set up the brackets and did everything. And we weighed the kids in, which I take great pride in because this is one of my treasures of small community and living in bubbles, is the post office let us weigh those cars in on the U.S. post office scales.
Really?
Yes. And that'll probably never happen again.
Well, I wonder, from when you began activities in the community like you've described and then now, is it different? And what I mean is, are there more hoops to jump through and more forms to sign out and more liability to think about of doing things like a soapbox derby now as opposed to when you started?
Oh my gosh, no. Would I want to take some of those challenges on now? No. When we applied for our wine license, we just had to have okay. I mean, we had to go through state, had to go through training, but basically we had to have an okay from the Presbyterian Church. And now every store has wine in it. And so the jumping through the loops is a lot harder probably now than it was then. The food handling permits, all of those things were much easier back then. Soapbox Derby, the liability was on the little house. And thank gosh, we only flipped one car and she's still alive and still living on the island and she's a good kid.
And probably one of our favorite stories.
Yeah, but it is. No, the, you know, of course, I think a lot of those codes, as you can see, have been relaxed because of COVID and they'll have to straighten some of those out afterwards. But no, it was much easier then.
Do you think one of the reasons we have such an active community is because we are considered rural in King County and perhaps we don't have as many social services as, let's say, Seattle? So the community needs to step up to address those lack of services. You know, what comes to mind for me is the Dub Project. I was on their board of directors for 4 years. And I just remember that Seattle had, you know, these taxpayer funded services that we didn't hear. So the Dove Project was kind of the fill in, if you will, for lack of public services.
Interesting question, Chris. Very interesting question. I don't know what motivated Dove to, you know, for a startup. I'm not that familiar with the story. I'm very familiar with the organization, but I'm not familiar with the story of why they did it. I think people just saw the need. I don't think it was like, we can't have it. But it is. It's kind of like, if we can't have it, we're going to make it happen in some way. I don't think it's, I don't know how to describe or really answer that question. I think it's a drive. I think if we see a need, we go forward. Look at what Land Trust has done. Oh my gosh.
Sure.
I mean, look what they are accomplishing. It is amazing. And the same with Dove and the same with many of those organizations. And they've all turned out to be worthwhile and because they're worthwhile causes. And if we don't get social funding, then we've got to figure out how we can make it happen. And that's what those leaders have done. That's real teamwork. That's really group. That's participation. That's believing. You know, that's magical.
Yeah. And I think you're exactly right. You know, when we're not getting King County to provide the, you know, funding or services for like the land trust or something like that, that we're picking it up ourselves. And I think it's community leaders like yourself that really facilitate that. So,
well, thank you. I hope I've had some input in that. I think we've created a lot of wonderful experiences. I run into it a lot. I mean, I get a million thank yous and letters from kids that work for me or stuff still come in. Oh. I still get phone calls from them.
Is there any project or effort that you did that didn't quite work out the way you wanted? Maybe the one that got away that you wish had come to fruition but didn't?
Wow. You know, I have to honestly say no.
Good.
I really do.
Good.
I really have to say no. I think everything, I watch where the scholarship committee started and what was happening. And I look at the group of people who came in and said, wow, this is a great thing. Let's make it bigger and better. And let's create a foundation. So there was growth. Soapbox Derby was short-lived, short-term. It was a happy occasion. It, you know, it went on. I mean, it didn't go on, but it has memories that went on.
Oh,
so
yes.
No, I really have to say the town Christmas tree. Oh, it's no longer in the backyard of the little house. And, but it's moved and it's gotten better and things have changed. And, you know, that's just part of, I'm going to say that my life ambition that way or rewards is full.
Certainly. It sounds like a lot of your efforts were the seed for, you know, what we have today that we take for granted, like the Christmas tree lighting, things like that. So you're kind of the mother of invention for those types of things on the island.
So it's nice to be tapped for this and say that people think we did do something. It's nice. It's good.
I think Vashon owes you a debt of gratitude. And I'm sure it's both ways. So the island has given you a lot to remember and enjoy. Are there any projects that you're working on now that you'd like to talk about?
The only current thing that I'm really involved in right now is Vashon Community Care. I see things churning. I hope we never, never find a spot where we can't care for our elders, because none of us would be here if it wasn't for our elders. So I hope I'm doing kind of a second retirement now. I've been working at Pandora's Box for a period of time. And I'm going to kind of step down from that and just spend some time doing my own things and some more time down at Vashon Community Care, trying to help them with whatever, whether it's gardening or walking our elders, or there are lots of things they can use help with. They have a great volunteer program. So I'm going to just step into that one. And that's where my energy is right now.
Well, on behalf of myself and Vashon and Maury Islands, thank you so much for what you've done. You know, the community would be much less of what it is if you hadn't done that.
Oh, well, thank you. They were all fun.
Okay, listeners, we have another treat for you today. We have the Betty Edwards before, and she was one of the two luminaries for the Strawberry Festival. And we have the other one, Melinda Powers. Welcome, Melinda.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, absolutely. For me personally, you've been such a great supporter of all my silly ideas of my books and my newspaper, and I can't thank you enough for that. So this is a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you, Chris. You provide so much good humor and good cheer and great attitude. I mean, we loved it every time you walked in the restaurant. It uplifted everything. You were part of the family there.
As I've said before, I felt like the hardware store was a family to me. You know, when you go in a restaurant, one of the reasons you feel comfortable is not only how the staff treats you, but how the staff treats each other. And it really looked like family staff that liked each other, and it wasn't like an oppressive workplace. So, and that goes to you. So kudos.
Hey, thank you. You know, it truly was a family. I mean, we consciously made it a family. I always wanted the hardware store to be a rock, for people in their lives, like no matter what was happening, they could come to work and find support in any way that they needed it.
Part of that for me, part of my B-22 stool that I am named after, I could have somebody new beside me, you know, another patron, and that was could start a conversation. But also I got to talk to your staff because they came there to get the drinks, and that was, you know, while they're few seconds that they were there, we could chit chat, and that was a perfect place for me.
Yeah, it really was. I mean, I think we loved it as much as you did then.
Now, one of the reasons you were picked for this honor, I guess, accolade as a luminary at the Strawberry Festival, was your contribution to Vashon itself. And I went through my notes. I did a radio show called Crossroads years ago. And it was the top was tourism. You know, I had the little Vashon tours, and I talked to you and I took notes, and you told me how important tourism was to the hardware store. But what also came out of that, which really amazed me, was you said the hardware store being open and being open because of tourists had given back at that time $500,000 in charity to organizations on the island, mm-hmm. and paid out $6 million in salaries to staff. And much of that, of course, going back into rent and groceries and spent here on the island. And I was just shocked at what a commercial and economic driver that restaurant was. You know, I remember working with Dove, and we had the Dove project, and we had the guest bartender night, which I thought was genius.
Oh gosh, I can't even remember how that got started, but we did it once and had such a good time and raised some money. And pretty soon everybody just got on the bandwagon, and everybody, every nonprofit, you know, wanted to do a guest bartender night. And it was just it was a perfect pairing. You know, we had the place and the food and the drinks and all came together for a good cause. And so it was really meaningful for us. And we did. So we were able to give away, as you mentioned, over 15 years, almost $500,000 in contributions, either directly or in the form of gift certificates or, you know, whatever they needed. Actually, yeah. We kind of always said yes. And you mentioned tourists, and yes, tourists to this island for all businesses, tourism is important for us to turn a profit. And you know, definitely our bread and butter and our most wonderful customers were our locals. And, but you know, as a local, you can only come out to eat so many times, unless it's you, Chris. You had your own bar stool. So it did take additional dollars from tourists for us to have a healthy profit. And that then enabled us to give back to the community in various ways over the years. So it was a very good thing.
You know, not only that, but I know personally that you were heavily involved in funding the fire department.
You know, our fire department was financially not in good shape, and it was really kind of an emergency situation, especially given that we're an island and we don't have a hospital, and we don't even have healthcare on the weekends. You know, it's the fire department was our de facto emergency room. Mm. And there was just no way we could let that fail on Vashon. So I got on board with that effort early, and I was really committed to telling the story, getting the truth out, letting people make up their own minds about what they thought was important. And fortunately, people got it and they trusted it, and they did vote to increase the levy, and the fire department is in great shape now. And so I'm really, really happy about that effort. It makes me feel really good and safe and secure.
Yeah. Well, I know you're out front and center on that. So thank you very much. So I wanted to ask Melinda, how do you decide where to put your efforts? I mean, do people come to you and say the island needs this, or do you identify it yourself to where you put your energy?
A little bit of both. Sometimes people will, you know, everybody is very impassioned about their cause. And so people would love to come and share that with me all the time, like probably on a daily basis. Someone would come in and say, this is what we're doing. This is so important. This is what our needs are. Can you help? And so, like I said earlier, we always like to say yes on some level. And sometimes it was, yes, we can do a $25 gift card, or yes, like the fire department, I will put all of my effort toward trying to make this happen. So I think it just sort of depended on what the cause was. And I mean, we pretty much supported everything, but the ones that I personally really could get into would just be things that would really resonate with me. One such cause, which probably isn't on the radar of a lot of people, but it was really meaningful to me, was the Seeds for Success group. And so I ended up joining their board for several years. And what they do on Vashon is they find working opportunities for people who might be disadvantaged or have disabilities in some form. And so I thought that that was really an amazing thing to spearhead and have in our community. And so I stepped up to do that. And we also employed several people actually from the program. And we saw great success with it. We just saw people really improve their skills all the way around by being in a good working environment. So that was something that really captured my heart. You know, the fire department, I just thought was so important for our community. But along the way, there have been causes that really speak to me. And at that point, I would throw everything I had, you know, behind it. So I think that, yes, we wanted to say the word yes to almost everything. We did.
So, you know, you've a year ago, you sold the hardware store restaurant and you're on a new phase of your life. Is there anything taken up? I know with the pandemic, probably not much, but are you doing anything now that you are passionate about?
It's been an interesting year for everyone, and it definitely has for me too. First of all, you know, when I decided to retire and sell the restaurant, it was back in July of 2019. So of course there was no hint of what was to come with COVID. And, you know, it just was such a tough and troubling time for every person, and businesses were just, oh my gosh, just struggling so much. And so it was really, oh God, a year of just this consternation constantly about, you know, everything that was hurtful about that year. So I felt really bad about that. But, you know, for me personally, I really just laid low for that, for year. And I had never, ever had the opportunity to do that. I've always worked 24/7 type of job, really, truly for 30, 40 years. So for me to just stop, you know, it did feel good and it felt weird. And I sort of just took up interests that I had for years and wasn't able to pursue, and stayed home and crocheted and read books and just took a few Zoom courses and,
oh nice,
you know, just really tried to do what to just be quiet and alone and do that. So it felt good to me. It felt right to me to do that.
I think with someone with your work ethic, it almost had an element of guilt about it, like I should be doing something.
Yes. Right. In fact, I read an article that just defined it perfectly, and it's called time anxiety, where you feel like you always need to be productive. And I definitely suffer from that. So I had to work on myself to not feel anxious about just being quiet, staying home and not doing anything. So it was, I learned a lot about myself last year.
Well, I tell you, I took an opposite approach. I pretend I'm retired until I'm retired. So that's worked well for me.
I love that.
What do you think, you know, as we hopefully come back to normal and we're out meeting and greeting, what's the next thing for you?
Well, it's interesting. I don't know. And I'm the type of person who, I'm really an intuitive person. So I'm really trusting that the right thing will appear. I do think I have something else in me. I just know myself well enough to know that I want to be doing something productive. But I will tell you this, Chris, and this is a scoop, and you're the first to hear it.
Whoa!
I am going to be moving. I'm going to move to Arizona. I think, you know, in a few months, I am going to do that. I'm going to move down to Arizona, and yeah, we'll see what happens.
So, you know, the heat wave we had a couple of days ago, that's their cool weather in Arizona.
Yes, and I do. And, you know, I lived there for 20 years, so I really am very aware of the pluses and minuses of Arizona.
Huh. Well, you'll be missed. Absolutely.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Is there a project or an issue that you wanted to pursue? And I asked the same thing to Betty, that didn't quite come out the way you wanted, or you couldn't fulfill what you wanted to do. Was there anything like that?
Well, let me think here. That's a good question. Off the top of my head, no, I'm not coming up with anything.
That's good.
I would say, I guess the thing that comes to mind is maybe I didn't do a good enough job, for example, when I was president of the chamber, in trying to bring the community together around healthy tourism. I feel like that, like I never quite presented that maybe the right way, or I don't know. I didn't feel very successful in my endeavor to try to blend the two, to take a community who, you know, it is a private community, and we live here because we like the quiet and the beauty. And so, you know, to try to sell bringing people onto the island to help support businesses didn't go over well with a lot of people. And I just really wanted people to understand that our businesses on Vashon need that, and that if we can be thoughtful about it and bring the right people over, that it could be a win-win, you know, for everyone. So anyway, I would say that there's an opportunity there still, you know, to do it right.
Well, I know that you were facing an uphill battle, because even with my small little Vashon tours, I get criticism from some of the, you know, old timers on the island about, you know, bringing all these people over. And I tell them that, you know, a lot of the very first businesses on this island were tourism, like the Chautauqua. That was all about bringing people here. It was all employed and supplied by local people. A lot of the original businesses, they took our resources and then they went away. So think about it. Tourists have not only been here a long time with many benefits, it still remains here. So I got to think that these people that don't have their eyes open that say we shouldn't have tourists come to the island.
It's a tricky situation. I really do get both sides. And there are days when I'll drive uptown and just think, oh my gosh, it took me forever to get through the intersection. And then there's long waits at all the restaurants. And so I get it. Yeah. It's a sticky situation. And I wish there was a perfect solution. And I'm not sure there is, but I just think that the more we can be thoughtful about it and identify, you know, we don't want to blast this to the world. And we just want kind of that thoughtful tourist. I always said, the thoughtful tourist over and, you know, appreciate our island, spend some dollars and go back home, you know? So I don't know. I would say that there is an opportunity there, but it's tricky.
Anything else you want to bring up or mention? Or
boy, I am just so grateful to have had the time that I've had on Vashon. I mean, I kind of feel like it's just restored my soul, honestly, you know, to live here and work here and be a meaningful part of the community. And, you know, when I first moved to the island, the way that I got connected day one was to start volunteering. Mm-hmm. So for me, it was, just a treasure trove of wonderful things to be able to meet people and work together for a common cause and things that I believed in. So it's just a great way to get into this community is to volunteer. Yeah. And then of course, you know, with the business and I just have felt so at home here and have just, loved every single minute.
So let me conclude by saying on behalf of myself and the community, thank you so much for all you've done over these years, and you're going to be missed. So send us a card or something.
Oh, I'll do better than that. I'll be back for sure.
And best of luck down there and stay cool.
Thank you so much, Chris. This was a pleasure. Thank you for asking me.
Oh, pleasure was mine.
Newspaper review, one of my favorite segments. Today we will be reviewing the Vashon Island News from 1916. But before we start, I need a little bit of setup on the history of newspapers themselves. The first one was Oliver Van Olinda's monthly newspaper Island Home, which began in 1892. The first weekly newspaper, the Vashon Island Press, also a Van Olinda paper, was published from June 1895 until May 1897. Then we kind of have a gap in knowledge. There may have been a paper, but we can't find anything regarding it until the Vashon Island News, which began in 1907. 7 years later, Ira Case bought the paper and moved it from Vashon to Burton. With the loss of the Vashon Island News to Burton, Robert M. Jones began publishing the Vashon Island Record in Vashon in 1916.
Okay, Elsa, so that is how this newspaper came into existence. We, you know, in the previous shows, we had the very beginning, we had the next newspaper. So I just kind of want to continue down that line of chronologically the newspapers on our island. And the one we have here, it was the earliest one I could find. It was our first year of publication, and it was the third issue. So it's pretty close to the very first paper they had. And the big news is the presidential election. Imagine.
No, it's a November paper. It's the presidential election, 1916.
Whew. So that was Woodrow Wilson. And the newspaper here contends that there will probably be a recount. So they've been having fun with recounts for a long time.
Nope. Yeah, look at these headlines. Seattle and King County, safely Republican. Brewer measures are defeated. Vashon Mori almost a tie on head of ticket.
Yeah, I don't know who he was running against.
But when you looked, what I, of course, wanted to do was look down into the article, and following is the vote for Republican and Democrat. And it gives you details about right there about every one of our neighborhoods, every one of our little communities. Burton voted for President Hughes, 77, Wilson, 64, and it just goes down.
He was right.
Down the list.
He was running against somebody named Hughes. Also, like Liza Beulah, Hughes got 37 votes, Wilson 26. Wow, this mm-hmm. really, and you can kind of imagine with the communities that small, you can almost tell who voted for whom.
Yes, you can. It must have been quite a discussion when people came together, or maybe it wasn't. Cove Hughes was got 56 votes, Wilson 32, Island Hughes was 14, Wilson was 14.
Wilson's 14.
Whoop. Yeah. Docton Hughes received 27, Wilson 27. Oh, there's a tie there. And Dolphin Point, President Hughes 23 or 28. My paper's a little foggy there. Wilson 29. Vashon President Hughes 88, Wilson 82. I mean, it was pretty close. I can see, you can see nationally why this was probably, if this reflected nationally, I can see why. Didn't you say there was a recount?
Well, they thought there would probably be one, so.
Yeah, I see.
Paper. But Quartermaster seems to be the only blowout for Hughes, for Wilson. Wilson at 56.
Yeah.
So other than that, Hughes seemed to carry the day or tie. So
very cool. Very interesting.
What I notice about this paper is it's just words. There are very few graphics in it. It's 4 pages long. So I think it's very rudimentary as far as newsprint, and that makes sense for a startup.
Yeah, 4 pages long, and there are some ads. So for the banks, banking by mail, and for blankets, and for the meats and poultry. And then there's a lot. Oh, and there's the ferry schedule. The steamboat schedule has been posted. And then there's some talk about the Burton High School and the Boy Scouts. But it's back to mostly the communities, and like every community maybe had somebody who is the social writer, and they were writing about who was visiting who. So that still is a big deal, and that's news in 1916. I mean, this is on the cover of the front page of who's visiting who.
I'm looking at the masthead, and it was Robert Jones was the editor and the owner, and subscription was $1 a year or 5 cents per copy. Now, if you want to call them, for instance, your advertising, the phone number was 62.
Okay, good. 62.
I could even remember that. What else? One of the ads that I found interesting was, starts off, big reduction in drugs, patent medicines, toilet and sundry goods. This was the Crown Drug Company in Tacoma. But I like this little caveat, extra specials on Monday, Tuesday, Friday, and Saturday. Wednesday and Thursday and Sunday, you're out of luck.
You're out of luck. So I wonder what that was about, like steam, the boat delivered on.
I bet it's coordinated with the mosquito fleet schedule somehow. Oh, and did you see the basketball season opens? It's at the YMCA, and basketball is two words. And basketball was invented in its first game. We mentioned this in the last show, was in 1893 in Connecticut or Massachusetts. So here we are, you know, 19 years later, and we have a regular league here on the island, which says a lot for the popularity of basketball.
Yeah, and so you also mentioned the YMCA. So the YMCA is everywhere. I'm impressed. We have one on Ashland Island.
Yeah, and that's where Kovos Brewery is now. That's where that was located. But only members could play basketball. Only those that pay their yearly dues of $1 for an entire year being at the YMCA. That's pretty good.
That's pretty good. YMCA. Did it have a pool?
I don't think so. One of the things we mentioned in last month's show was the headline, the very first automobile on the island. Remember? Mm-hmm. It was Furstein, I think. Or Beale, I'm sorry. And we were talking about, well, how do you get it fixed?
Right.
Well, now we're starting to see a Vashon garage, a full Ford parts. They work on any type of vehicle. So that's interesting that now that modality of travel is starting to pick up steam.
Yeah, automobile service day and night. So just call their phone number. We know that they had at least 176 phones on the because they're number 173.
The other ad.
So I wonder if that's the is that the only garage on the island?
Only one I saw. I may have missed one, but I think that was the only one on the island. at that time. And the other thing that caught my attention is, of course, the big thing happening in the world when this paper was out was World War One, right? That was the big event in the world. And this ad says, begins before the war price.
Right.
And they're talking about how they got blankets and flannels and they're selling them at prices you could get before the war. Because I'm sure a lot of consumer items were either unavailable or very expensive during the war, you know, with so much disruption around the world. And his number is 152. Did you check out the classifieds?
Do they actually say classifieds? And there's the church directory. What page is it on?
You know, these pages aren't numbered. Well, just believe me, it's there. Okay. The one thing I found interesting, most of the classifieds are livestock sales and things like that. But this one says, for sale cheap, acetylene gas plant, complete and in excellent condition. What does that mean? I mean, I would think acetylene torch or acetylene gas.
Gas plant.
Gas plant. I can't.
That's a whole, yeah, I like a welding shop. The whole welding shop. That's what I would think.
Some of these.
How much does it cost? How much?
None of these really have the prices. You just got to call them.
That's what I noticed. No pricing. Everybody was negotiating.
Now, here's a 1915 Ford Roadster in good condition, L.C. Beal. Now, I'm wondering if that was the same Beal that bought the first car.
Mm-hmm.
Glenn Roadster. Well, this is a Ford Roadster. I guess not. The Beals, like, they got a bevy of automobiles.
Yeah. And then up above that, you've got two or three horses, harnesses, and one heavy wagon for sale. And so I think people are selling their horses and they're buying tractors and cars.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah. Offload those horses cheap.
And we've got a another ad here. Phone number 167, Prompt Auto Service. But this is a taxi that meet all boats. So it's kind of like Uber in 1916.
Wow. See, nothing's new. History repeats itself.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Another directory I saw was, you know, they had a listing of all the churches. Below that, they had a listing of lodges or I guess fraternal orders. But many of these are not, they only give the initials. For instance, the IOOF is meeting Thursday at the center. So do you know what that is?
No, what is that?
It's the International Order of Odd Fellows. I just find it interesting that they don't anywhere in this say that. They just have the, you know, the acronym.
Yes, I'm sure that the Odd Fellows are very respected, is a very respected group, but I would change my name. I'd do some brand marketing around that and do some research and change my name possibly.
Well, it comes from England, and you know, they had guilds for, like, you know, copper guilds and wool guilds and, you know, people, but they decided there were some professions that didn't have enough people to make a guild, so they kind of put them all together and they just call them these Odd Fellows because they were odd jobs and things that were uncommon. And that's how they got together. And they actually built, I believe, where the Blue Heron is, you know, next to the VCA.
Yeah.
They were the ones that constructed that. And if you look at the chimney of that building, at the very top, it's all brown brick. And in very light brick, it says IOOF in the brick, like they made the bricks lighter to do that.
I think I've noticed that.
Yeah.
I mean, we think of, so Odd Fellows really are the services and that, you know, run our country right now. I mean, so everything we need done.
That's true.
Okay.
But other large lodges were the Masonic, the Modern Woodmen of America. the Vashon Horticultural Society, and GAR. Now, I get that one stumped me.
Yeah, Department of Washington and Alaska meets first Wednesdays in each month.
And Van Olinda is a commander, so I think my guess is it's veterans, because Van Olinda was really into recording and documenting the veterans on the island.
So what's GAR?
I think it's Grand
the Guard of American Riflemen.
No, I think it's Grand Army of the Republic.
Oh, of course it is. Okay.
But again, I think it's odd that they expect the reader to know that.
Well, it was a big deal back then, so probably the reader did know that. And if you didn't, you weren't invited anyway.
So my favorite ad on the last page here, towards the bottom, it says in big letters, "I have moved." And then in smaller letters, it continues, "To the property next to the telephone office, give me a call." Now, this is Arthur, the general blacksmith, but he gives no number. Like, I guess you already have his number, or it just seems like an essential part of your ad. Give me a call and then give the phone number. I don't know. Maybe it's zero. Who knows? These phone numbers are so small. Maybe you just pick up the phone and it's him.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Give me a call. I'm right next to the post office. We all know that that number is zero, and you call them, and then they'll call next door, as in shout next door. Hey, Arthur, you've got a phone call.
Yeah. He's not going to hear you. He's pounding metal with his tongs.
Now it's time for some trivia answers. Question number one. The beach most islanders know as KVI Beach has the official name of Point Hire, so named for a crew member of the Charles Wilkes expedition. KVI is one of the few remaining salt marsh environments in the Puget Sound. We had one other salt marsh on the island. So the question is, where was it and what happened to it? And the answer is Point Robinson. The Point Robinson Lighthouse grew from a fog station to a light tower to the current lighthouse that we have there today. The sand spit on which they were built was continually, quote-unquote, improved to stabilize the site. The final stabilization came in 1939, and that completely covered the salt marsh and turned it into an open grassland that is there now. The project effectively covered the 4 acres of salt marsh that had in the past proved a menace to health and a breeding place for swarms of mosquitoes. Unfortunately for us, this concept of progress from nearly 80 years ago eliminated a major ecological site, which is essential for numerous marine, terrestrial, and bird species. Question number two. Currently, there exists the Vashon Opera Company. Have we ever had another one? And the answer is, yes, we did. Because if the answer was no, well, that wouldn't be very fun trivia. The current opera company was founded in 2008 and held its inaugural season in 2009-2010. And they opened that season with La Boheme, or as some people say, La Boheme. Later on, they had The Tender Land and the children's opera Little Red Riding Hood. But few people know that there was a short period in the 1920s when they had the Vashon Morig Opera Company. Their first production was in April of 1922, when a, quote, capacity house greeted the opening night of Sylvia at the Vashon High School Auditorium. The next year, they offered the Japanese operetta Ohari-san. And in the final season, the opera company held a musical comedy, Will Tell. So, fat lady's not singing, so we're not over. Next question. Who was the only person on Vashon to be awarded the military's highest honor? That highest honor, of course, is the Medal of Honor, bestowed on those members of the military showing valorous acts above and beyond the call of duty. The Medal of Honor Day is celebrated on March 25th, because that was the day in 1863 when the first Medal of Honor recipients were presented to six members of the Civil War's Andrews Raiders. Locally, Vashon's own Benjamin Wilson was awarded the Medal of Honor for his bravery during the Korean War. A graduate of Vashon High School, Wilson enlisted in World War II and was stationed at Pearl Harbor when it was attacked. He became an officer and was mustered out at the end of the war. He rejoined as a private within a year and became a first sergeant by the time the Korean War began. In his action at the Wonchon Reservoir in June 1951, quote, Wilson distinguished himself by conspicuous gallantry and indomitable courage above and beyond the call of duty in action against the enemy. His courageous delaying action enabled his comrades to reorganize and effect an orderly withdrawal. While directing evacuations of the wounded, he suffered a second wound but elected to remain on the position until assured all of his men had reached safety, unquote. Pretty amazing story. Well, folks, that is it for this show. I appreciate you listening. It's always a pleasure to do these. And of course, I can't do them alone. I really would like to a heartfelt thank to many people, including my guests, Betty Edwards and Melinda Powers. And of course, the folks that you don't hear, Elsa Kroonquist. Well, I guess you did hear her. She's always game to do these newspaper reviews for me, which I appreciate. But there's also Bruce Hallman and Mike Suddeth that vet a lot of information and send me a lot of interesting stories that their help is invaluable. So thank you all. And listeners, if you have a topic that you'd like covered or would like to know more about, please send us an email at radio@vashonheritage.org. Now please stay tuned for the Mostly True Radio Show.